2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another Baseball America podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer, joined by J.J. Cooper. It's been a really interesting and fun and busy week. Manny Machado finally signs. It's a record-breaking free agent contract. Bryce Harper rumors are still out there en masse, and everyone's trying to figure out where he's going to land. And hey, we have actual games beginning this week.
Well, exhibition games.
Games are being played on a field, which is nice because... Professional games are being played on a field. That has not happened since, you can kind of sort of count the Fall League. I mean, it's been a few months. So
No, that's not true. We have had a wonderful winter ball season. Within the U.S., there has not been.
Yes,
that is true.
Definitely a fun week here for, I think, every baseball fan, writer, anyone with an interest in the game. JJ, I want to start on Machado. 10 years, $300 million to San Diego Padres. The deal became official yesterday. We're recording this on a Friday. It became official on a Thursday. You have the history here at Baseball America, much longer than anyone in this office, actually, except for Matt Eddy. You're the second.
And Linwood Webb. Those are the two with higher, longer tenure now. But yes, I've been here 16 years going on 17. It's been a long time.
You've seen this play out over two decades now. Team has big farm system. Team tries to make a big addition. Sometimes they do it too early. Sometimes they do it too late. Sometimes they time it just right. When you heard the Padres were signing Manny Machado, and now that you've had a day or a couple days to digest it from when it was first reported, what are just kind of your overall big picture thoughts on the signing and what it means for the Padres' present and future?
I think it's, for one, any time. Again, I think that it is a weird world we have lived in. I think that we've almost seen an overcorrection, because there was a time when there was irrational exuberance when it came to free agents. You know, again, even like in my time at Baseball America, I remember the winter meetings where Jose Reyes, like the Marlins are in it, and they signed Jose Reyes and they signed Mark Burley and all that. And I think that was the same year that the Angels signed Albert Pujols
to C.J. Wilson.
And C.J. Wilson, Albert Pujols to a 10-year deal. And the reality of it is, at that time, like, yes, Albert Pujols tailed off quicker than the Angels would have expected. However, that was a deal when you looked at Pujols's, and when we say age, let's just be honest with it, what his reported age was, because there is at least, you know, some reasonably documentable, you know, things where Albert Pujols has suggested at times that maybe he might be a little older than his, you know, than the age. But even if you looked at his age he was listed at, you knew that you were getting, you know, you hoped like the tail end of Albert Pujols' greatness, and then you knew there'd be a decline phase. When the Tigers announced their Miguel Cabrera extension, which it is going to go on for an amazing amount of years from now, for a player who you hope he's going to have bounced back, but is in the decline phase of his career, fans have gotten kind of, not just front offices, but fans have gotten skeptical of these deals. But again, I really think that there's been an overcorrection on that. When you could get one of the better players in the game, and Manny Machado has been one of the better players in the game for the past 5 years. WAR is a simplistic stat, but he has been roughly a 5-WAR player, which is a hard thing to find year after year, and he's done that in his early 20s. He is going to play the next 5 years of this deal. Should be, again, I'm not saying that he's going to get better, but it should be at least kind of, he is at the age where you say there should not be a tail off, a significant tail off at all in the first half of this deal. If you're the Padres, if you can get a player like that to add to what we rank as the number one farm system in the game, to add to a team that already has some pieces at the big league level, I do not know, again, that those are things that usually, that is something that if I'm a Padres fan, I am thrilled to see this, because all of a sudden, this is a team that I don't know if it's going to be 2019, but by 2020, 2021, this team should be a serious contender in the NL West. In a difficult division, the Dodgers have been really good for a long time, and they're really smart, and they have a lot of money and all that. But, I just look at this and say, yeah, I mean, if you can add one of the best players in baseball, that's something you want to do.
Obviously, the size of the contract raises a lot of eyebrows. San Diego, the Padres historically have not been particularly high up when it comes to payroll. I wrote about it a little bit. They've been in the bottom 10 in payroll 9 of the last 10 seasons. But to the credit of Ron Fowler and that ownership group, look, they set a franchise record deal when they signed James Shields a few years ago. They then spent $80 million internationally in 2016, 2017. They set a new franchise record for a free agent deal with Eric Hosmer last year. And now they set the record for largest free agent deal in North American professional sports with Manny Machado. They've opened the wallet. I will say that, look, I can understand the skepticism of, okay, you know, fast forward 2 or 3 years, if the Padres are unable to trade Will Myers, and I think even if they do trade him, they're going to have to eat significant salary. There is a concern that you're going to have three players responsible for more than $70 million of a payroll. Even if the Padres bump their payroll up another $30 million, that would put them 130, 140. Three players eating up half your payroll. I understand the concern, but as you said, at the end of the day, they have upgraded their team quite a bit. And more than just that, they didn't just sign a big-name free agent. They signed a big-name free agent who's going to play the position. They did not have anyone coming up for in this farm system. Hudson Potts is a very fine prospect. He's a big leaguer. But again, it's okay. He's
potential, you know, big leaguer.
Potential big leaguer. In terms of, when I say big leaguer, he's seen as a big league caliber prospect.
I just want to make clear that, yeah.
He's a teenager who has a little bit of time in AA at this exact moment. But again, it was, hey, he could be a nice player. He could contribute. But the Padres needed more than that. This offense has been the bottom three or four in baseball in most categories for years now. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, what Manny Machado brings, his overall skill set, his ability to hit, his ability to hit for power, his defense, he makes them a better team now. He makes them a better team 3 years from now. Even if he opts out in 5 years, he does have that opt-out after the 2023 season. Even if he does opt out then, the Padres, if they do the right things around him, should be in contention 2021, potentially 2022, and 2023 as well. They'll have gotten a hugely impactful player for 5 years at a time, like you said, where he should not tail off. That's a huge addition you should make, and one they were right to make.
The other thing that stands out to me, with all these teams, when we talk about rebuilding teams, when we talk about successful teams, one of the things I look at is you have to have some stars. Depth is wonderful, but you have to have some cornerstone players. And when I look at this Padres team now, adding Manny Machado is by every definition, again, if you want to simplify it to the war calculations, you got to have a 5-plus war kind of player.
I mean, take it, just go straight. Hey, average on-base slugging percentage. Let's go average homers, RBIs. For a young player in his 20s, he's coming off 4 straight 30 home run seasons. He just had the best season of his career at age 25, 26, 27, 28. He's now hitting his peak. Again, this is someone who is a premier player by any measurement, and he will make this Padres team better.
So now you have Manny Machado. It's not a sure thing, but Fernando Tatis Jr. has all the characteristics of being a player who could be another cornerstone player. You know, he is a shortstop who can hit for power, who actually now runs. He's gotten better at that. You know, he should be able to stay at the position at least, you know, for quite a while.
Let's clear this up. Machado's their third baseman. Yes. Tatis is their shortstop. Yes. That's what it is.
So that gives them two. And then, again, ideally you want to have, it doesn't even necessarily, you have to have three cornerstone type players, but you want to have a third who's close to that. And we have a multitude of candidates for that. We have a multitude of guys. We don't know that Francisco Mejia is going to be that. You know, if he could, he there's a chance. But again, we're talking like that third player, that third component. Eric Hosmer, I don't know if, you know, but he has shown at times he can be the third player on a team, on a world championship team. You know, again, maybe it's a Manny Margot, maybe it's a Hunter Renfro. Again, these are guys where we're getting to maybe it's Luis Urias. You know, there's a multitude of guys who at least have a chance to do that. So on the lineup side, I do think that they have all the pieces now to. There's enough pieces there, and the other part of that is that they also have enough trade. The reality is that they've got a lot of guys who now, you know, are useful trade ships also in the farm system. But Kyle, the second question, the most important question then comes, okay, then we get to the pitching staff. I like the bullpen. Bullpen seems fine, but does the starting, again, starters are devalued now, but does the starting rotation have enough to get this team where it wants to go?
So we've looked at this a lot, how long it takes pitchers to really acclimate to the big league level. And there are always exceptions, right? Justin Verlander came up a year after he was drafted, stud from day one, rookie of the year on a World Series rotation. Jose Fernandez, second he came up in 2013, stud. Those are the exceptions. The vast majority of pitchers, even if you look at Max Scherzer, Trevor Bauer, pick your favorite pitcher, it took him a couple years to get acclimated. In some cases, Scherzer, it was 6 years. Bauer, year six as well. Even if you take it a little further, the guys we saw last year take a step forward, the Kyle Freelands of the world, that was year two. They were fine in year one, but they really take it up a notch and become, you know, really successful year two, three, four.
I was going to say year two, year three, year four.
And then Mike Foltynewicz was with the Braves. It was year five. That 2 to 4 year range, that second full season in the majors is when you start to really see potential for true, whether it's all-star talent or that level of performance that you can feel confident putting in the middle or front of a rotation. For the Padres guys, they got Lucchese up last year. Lamet, when he comes back from TJ, I think is a keeper as well.
Which is 2020?
No, he'll be back this year, but it'll be late.
And yeah, so 2020
be,
really.
There'll be a little bit of an acclimation period getting back there. So assuming Paddock, Allen, Quantrill come up this year, best case scenario, they're not really going to be performing like, okay, you know, potentially postseason worthy starting pitchers until 2020. And that's earliest, best case scenario, nothing goes wrong. Then you have the next wave of Gore, Morjon, Patino, Michelle Baez will be in there somewhere in the middle potentially. All those guys will get their first taste if nothing goes wrong in 2021. And really, it's going to be 2022 before you can say, okay, or so they'll get their first taste potentially 2020. And by that point, maybe it's 2021 where you can say, okay, maybe they are performing at a level we can feel confident about. That's all best case scenario. That's if none of those guys get hurt. That's if none of those guys have any extended hiccups. That's if all of those guys come up fairly quickly, stay healthy, and acclimate right away. And we know that's not going to happen. Maybe two will, two won't make it at all. So realistically, and this is the point I kept driving home, I've been on a couple of San Diego radio shows talking about this. I kind of wrote about it a little bit in the article about Manny Machado's signing. Manny Machado's signing does not necessarily accelerate the Padres' playoff timetable, because as amazing as Manny Machado is, he cannot accelerate the pitcher's development curve. That's still going to take time. And so for me, you know, even hearing people say, oh, 2020, that's still a little early. I mean, for 2020 to be realistic that they're a postseason caliber contender in 2020, that would be Lucchese and Lamet are, again, everyone's healthy. They're back performing at the levels they were before. And that Quantrill, Allen, Paddock get up this year, have a really strong first year, and then by year two, they're all successful to level their need to be. That's still a stretch for me. For me, it's going to be 2021 before this team is really going to be a postseason contender. And that is, again, the best case scenario, nothing goes wrong.
And see, this is where what I'm going to say is that I don't disagree with anything you said there necessarily, but this is to me where if I'm the Padres, I am using my bountiful, and I do mean bountiful pitching prospect talent to go out there, and I think that this is a team that absolutely needs to say, we're going to spend some of that talent to find, you know, again, let's say that they're going to have, you know, between Lucchese, Lament, Logan Allen, Jacob Nix, Cal Quantrill, those are the close to the big leagues. The guys who
Eric Lauer made it.
Eric Lauer. Between those six guys, let's say that we're going to say, okay, we're counting on those guys for spots. Maybe it's even spots 2, 3, 4, you know, 2, 3, 5 in the rotation. But I feel like this team absolutely needs to go out And I don't know if it's available right now. I mean, again, there was a lot of talk that the Indians would have trade Kluber in the right deal or Bauer in the right deal. And by the way, you know, unfortunately, I don't think this is a great match for them, because if the Indians are going to make a trade like that, what do the Indians need? A low-cost, middle-of-the-order kind of outfielder.
Well,
you know,
they actually need outfielders, which is what the Padres have a lot of.
The problem is I don't think the Padres have anyone, though, who you say, I don't know who the Padres have who I confidently state makes the Indians significantly better. Who's the guy who makes them significantly
better? Oh, absolutely. Franchi Cordero, Hunter Renfroe, Franmil Reyes are all better outfielders than the guys the Indians are running out
of the corners
right now.
I'm not saying they're not better, but they're not. Every one of them.
They can't lead a prospect package, but they would represent better players than the Indians are running out in the corners this year. Absolutely.
That's absolutely easy, but that doesn't mean that's the right deal. Like, if I compare those guys to, like, if I said, okay, compare those guys to just pick a guy, like, they're not the guy where you say, this is a guy. Yes, they absolutely. The bar of what's going to make them better than what they have now is very, very low.
You add one of those guys with an Adrian Morahone, they're not the leader
right,
of that prospect
Right, but my point
package.
Being, if I'm the Indians and I'm still trying to contend in 2019, what I'm looking to do is when I trade, if I'm going to trade a Kluber or a Bauer, okay, for everything that I lose on this end, I'm going to try to get most of it back on the other end. The outfielder I'm getting is so much better. You know, again, it's hard to have the perfect match for that, but to give an example, and the Dodgers are not going to trade, but like if you said that they're trading with the Dodgers, well, the Dodgers still have such a bounty of outfielders that you'd be like, okay, if you believe in Alex Verdugo, how much is Alex Verdugo going to be better than, like, is he going to be more significantly better than a Franchi or a, you know, again, we can debate these things, and again, that's not even the perfect example, but to me, they need to go out and get a front, you know, Matt and Eddie and I were talking about it, and he suggested a Zach Greinke trade would be a very, you know, again, there's some cost there, but they need to get someone. I feel like that this is the team that it is wasting it to say we're not going to make a push for 2020 because our pitching won't be ready. Because the reality of it is that at that point, you've spent 3 years of the Hosmer deal, and you've spent 2 years, you're in year two of the Machado deal, and you're still, like, you're going to get to the point where some of these guys start getting expensive. Like, the window is going to start closing on you from the standpoint of your position players are going to hit arbitration at the point where your pitchers start to really figure it out. That's the danger.
Would hit arbitration in 2020. Renfroe, I believe, 2020 as well. So there's going to be some consideration there. But I will say this. The Padres right now, still, you know, some of these other teams had guys get brought up early, and then they started to show, okay, this is a cornerstone-type talent that we can build around. The Padres haven't had anyone ascend to that level yet within this farm system. The timing of it's going to be interesting, whether or not they can get to all sync up. I've written about that before, where past rebuild attempts, even if the talent's all there, the Blue Jays of the late 90s are my favorite example of this, where you look on paper, the talent they had was, I mean, that was a talent, there was enough talent there to beat at very least some of those Red Sox teams and contend with some of those Yankees teams, but they didn't time it up right. By the time the pitchers had peaked, the hitters were already gone. It's going to be a challenge for the Padres. I will say this, you know, there's a lot of focus on the pitching staff. Manny Machado is fantastic. He is a great player. He will not single-handedly take the Padres from 28th in runs scored and 28th in OPS last year to the middle of the pack, even if he comes and does everything he needs to do, and even if the Padres go and make a big pitching splash, this still is probably not a competitive team. They need Eric Hosmer to bounce back. They need Will Myers to bounce back. They need Manny Margot and Austin Hedges to take the steps forward they have not yet taken. They need Hunter Renfroe and Franmil Reyes to continue taking the steps forward they have. There's a lot of things this team still has to have happen, even if they do everything right, with the talent they already have. And that, I think, will be one of the more interesting subplots of 2019, because as it stands, they're not ready to contend for the playoffs but if these guys progress, then all of a sudden that 2020 contention looks a lot more likely than it does right now.
The interesting thing about that, though, is I don't think you mentioned the player who I expect to be the second best player on the 2019 San Diego Padres.
Who do you believe that is?
Tatis. If you look nowadays, if you look at our recent track record, you know, Tatis is a guy who does have upper-level minor league experience now. He is a, again, it is not, if you ask my confidence in Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s bat and Eloy Jimenez's bat more than Fernando Tatis, I'm absolutely more confident in the bat because they are almost, as hitters, the perfect hitting prospects. They hit for power, they hit for average, they walk, and they don't strike out a lot. Those are like check, 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 check. But when you talk about Tatis, if you said, can he be, you know, again, playing shortstop, and if he can play a solid shortstop, which, by the way, he can make some acrobatic plays, you know, again, if he can be a solid defensive shortstop, and let's say that he comes up and he hits 270 with some power, you know, and gets on base at a decent clip, which I think is within his ability to do. If he does that, then you're asking Eric Hosmer, you're not even asking for him to fully bounce back. You're just asking for him to be your, let's say, your fourth best hitter. If Manny Margot can play, you know, really solid defense and center and hit for some average. If Hunter Renfro is a low average guy for hits for power, all of a sudden the pieces start, you know, when those are complementary pieces, again, we don't know what Mejia is going to do, but if Mejia can be a, you know, man, this guy puts the bat on the ball a lot. He doesn't walk ever, but he puts the bat on the ball a lot, and he's hitting 300 and playing an okay defense, and you're splitting him with Hedges. All these things. Again, I don't think 2019 is their year, even if they went out and acquired. They could acquire Kluber and Marcus Stroman, and I don't think 2019 is their year. But I do think that this team, it's really like you're setting what you want this year. Again, there are the rare team that makes that giant leap. But if this is a San Diego Padres team that can put some of these pieces together and they finish, they basically have a season much like what the Phillies had last year.
Honestly, even the 2013 Royals are the great example. Yes. The Royals have 9 straight losing seasons. In 2013, they jumped to 86 wins. A lot of the young bats had
They were awful the first half, but then the second half, they got better.
A lot of the young players start to really take steps forward. That was the year they acquired James Shields and Wade Davis. Those guys provide immediate boost. They get to 500, above 500, and they build on it. That at the end of the day, the goal for the Padres should be, let's have a winning season. If something more than that happens,
but if they get
great.
To 80, 82 wins this year, even if it was 80, but 82 wins this year, winning season.
That's a win for them.
And that means that they go into 2020 saying, okay, we're part of this. Look, all we need to do, you know, a couple of further steps forward, and we are contending in the NL West.
The Padres have made this big move. We've talked ad nauseum about what it does for them and what still needs to happen for them. There's an article up now on baseballamerica.com you can check out, I wrote earlier this week. The White Sox were the other team in the Manny Machado sweepstakes. They're another team that has a long stretch of losing seasons. Along with the Padres, they are one of only 4 teams to not make the postseason this decade. They lose out on Manny Machado. You never know. The public rumors change day to day.
But publicly, they have said they're not on Bryce Harper.
When you look at this team, where they stand right now as a major league club, what they stand to gain in 2019, cough, Eloy Jimenez, cough. What is your overall assessment of the White Sox and how realistic it is for them to take a step forward this year, contend by 2020? Just where are they at when you look at the big picture?
I don't want to over-dramatize it, but man, this is a crushing blow. Because to me, we talked about, like, again, I am a strong believer that you need cornerstone guys. Why did the Braves take the big step forward last year? Because they had Freddie Freeman, but all of a sudden they had Ronald Acuna, who's a cornerstone 5+ war type player. And you throw in that Ozzie Albies is a wonderful number, you know, third piece now. You know, and the pitching staff got better. You know, when we talk about, you know, why did the Astros, well, how did the Astros go from being terrible to world, you know, World Series champs? Well, they had Jose Altuve, George Springer, Carlos Correa, and now they have Alex Bregman. They have cornerstone type guys, guys who are significantly better than the average MLB starting player. My concern with the White Sox is okay, let's just start with, let's say Eloy Jimenez is that guy. And I wouldn't be shocked at all if Eloy Jimenez, you know, was basically produced this year what we've gotten kind of spoiled by, like rookies who come in and it's like, man, this guy's one of the better hitters in baseball. Eloy Jimenez could do that this year. But let's say he does. And let's also say that Jose Abreu, you know, has a good Jose Abreu season. Okay? But even if we're saying that, you're still, like, when you talked about you're saying that these Padres need guys to step forward. Well, again, I felt really confident about saying Fernando Tatis Jr. has a good chance to do that. We say that about Eloy. Yoan Moncada has some significant steps forward if he's going to be that guy. He's going to play third base, it looks like, this year, potentially, but he needs some steps forward. I don't think Tim Anderson can be that guy. Well, but then when we go to the prospects besides Eloy, who's the other potential cornerstone guy out of those guys? Like, they've got some good players. They've got some guys who can be very solid big leaguers, but a lot of them are guys who I think have a chance to be solid big leaguers, not cornerstone 5+ war kind of guys.
The White Sox, to me, where they maybe are a step ahead of the Padres is you look at their 2019 staff, and it is a better strength staff. You have Ronaldo Lopez, Carlos Rodon, if he can stay healthy. You know, Ivan Nova is a one-year rental. He's a free agent after 2019, but he's a nice pitcher. Like, they at least have three major league starters from opening day that you say, hey, you know, these guys are solid. Again, mm-hmm. Rodon and Lopez are young. And that's not even counting if Lucas Giolito figures it out. Even if you don't believe he will, there's still three guys there you can like. And even their bullpen, as much as the Padres have some weapons in that bullpen, Alex Colomé, Kelvin Herrera, you know, Nate Jones at the end of it, that's a pretty nice bullpen. The White Sox 2019 pitching is in a little bit better shape than the Padres 29 pitching at the start of the season. So that's what you
even with the Kopech, disappointing news with Kopech missing all of this year.
You can foresee Kopech, again, comes back next year. If by next year Dylan Cease is ready, I do think there is a chance, not that the White Sox 2020 starting rotation will be better than the Padres 2020 mm-hmm. starting rotation. And I can also see their 2021 starting rotation being better than the Padres.
Absolutely.
So that is where you can have a little bit of faith. But you're right. You look at the modern, you know, the lineup as it stands now for what it looks like it will be on opening day, Jose Abreu is the only guy that's an above average big leaguer right now. That's it.
That is it.
So, and even if you project Moncada and Anderson to take the steps forward and become even just above average big leaguers, okay, so you have three of them when you have to bat nine guys in a lineup. Let's add Eloy. You've got a fourth piece. Okay, well, more than half your lineup is still below average big league hitters. That's a problem that's, again, I don't see that getting solved in 2019. I don't see that getting solved in 2020. You know, Nick Madrigal was the fourth overall pick. You can believe in him, hope for him, and we'll see how it all shakes out. But again, you mentioned there's some good players, cornerstone.
A lot of good players. Again, like they have a lot of outfielders who have plausible big league careers ahead of them.
At the end of the day, with the White Sox, you kind of hit on it. You see hope. I mean, even if this, again, Eloy hits and Moncada and Anderson take a step forward, none of this is guaranteed. There's perfectly valid reasons to be skeptical on Moncada and Anderson. I actually believe in Anderson more than I believe in Moncada, but that's a side discussion.
I may go the other way.
There's not a lot has to happen for them to even have a halfway worthy major league lineup this year and probably next year too, and maybe even 2021.
The hope you have with them is we're talking about that the Padres, who have spent all their money now, and now everything you would assume, I don't think they're going to go get Dallas Keuchel, or you would assume that everything else going forward for the Padres is going to be acquisitions, not signings. The White Sox, clearly, the thing that you hope for you if you're a White Sox fan is okay, if you're out on Harper, you struck out this year. You struck out this year on
adding. You hope you can go get Nolan Arenado next year. There is a very big free agent class next year that, look, we do have to draw attention. Nolan Arenado is a free agent. Paul Goldschmidt's a free agent. J.D. Martinez, potentially a free agent if he opts out. There's a really good class coming. Chris Sale, potential free agent. So there are going to be options.
I don't think that one's going to be a realistic
option. I don't either, but potentially.
Please yes. Let that happen. What I want to have happen there is Chris Sale comes back, and they hold up, you know, the free agent, the press conference with the jersey, and hold up a shredded jersey. That would be the best. That would be a wonderful way. Like, okay, we're all having a laugh about this, you know. Like, yeah, but yeah, I don't think that.
So there are big classes coming in 2019 and potentially 2020. Francisco Lindor, Mike Trout are coming up. So there's a chance the White Sox could always go from the outside. But I would say that the way the Padres are constructed right now, with what they have coming, they are ahead of where the White Sox are with what they have right now and what they have coming.
Yes, again, and part of that comes back to, like, the way I would put it with the Padres is, beyond Tatis, I would view no one in their farm system as untouchable. Now, there are players I would not give up. It would be a very high price. But they have a lot of players who could be cornerstones of deals. Like, if they want to get the big, help the big league club, Mackenzie Gore, even after a blister-ruined 2019, has massive, massive trade value. You could make Mackenzie Gore the centerpiece of a trade to acquire a very good big league starting pitcher. And again, that's the starting point, and then you're like, but you're not having to fill in much after that. And to be honest, if you're willing to take on salary, there are guys like, no, that Mackenzie Gore by himself would be too much. You have, again, Patino. There's a multitude of guys who either are the first piece, the second piece, or the third piece in almost any deal you want to put together. With the White Sox, assuming that Eloy Jimenez is not part of this deal. Now, Dylan Cease could be, you know, if you wanted to, but again, maybe, you know, there are ways you could work out these deals. However, okay, once if you said that, you know what, we're counting on Eloy, Kopech, and Cease, and maybe I'm being unfair in saying that let's take those three. After that, it gets to guys who very quickly to me are second pieces in deals, not first.
The White Sox, for me, they're going to have to hit big now in the 2019 free agent class. We hit on some of this, but here's the more complete list. Nolan Arenado, Garrett Cole, Chris Sale, who we've talked about probably wouldn't end up there, Xander Bogaerts, Anthony Rendon, J.D. Martinez, Paul Goldschmidt, Justin Verlander, Josh Donaldson, Madison Bumgarner. Even outside of that top 10 group, you get Didi Gregorius, you get Zach Wheeler, you get Marcell Ozuna. The 2019 free agent class,
As it is right now, some of these guys will get extended.
Yes. As it stands right now, even if half these guys get extended, you're still talking about six premium free agents.
And the reality of it is the fact that these guys have not been extended yet, fewer guys get extended in the final years of their deal, the final year of before free agency, than get extended before that. Why? Because at this point, now again, there's still some risk involved, but you've already taken most of the risk. You know, Nolan Arenado could miss this season with an injury, and Nolan Arenado has enough resume on his, you know, behind him that he would be a top free agent. Again, in a way that if you're a second, third year player and you are offered an extension, you don't feel that same level of comfort. There's a lot of these players who will hit free agency probably. And yes, there are a lot of things that could go there. And again, the advantage that we have not talked about with the White Sox, I think, is a very, very, very important advantage if we're talking about White Sox and Padres, is
they have the financial flexibility, which the Padres now are very limited in.
But that wasn't where I was going. The Padres are in a division where they have a juggernaut in the division that's gone to back-to-back World Series, who can spend more money than them, and by the way, is one of the few teams I see in baseball who doesn't have windows. The Dodgers are capable, because their scouting, player development, and free agent acquisitions are all good enough that they don't have windows. They can be contenders for a significant period of time going forward, even though their window already has stretched for half a decade. So they can do that. I look at the AL Central and you say, the Indians' window feels like it is closing. They're still the best team in that division potentially, but that team is significantly worse than the team that came within one inning of winning the World Series a couple of years ago. And they are significantly worse than the team that basically was quickly exited the playoffs last year. They could still, you know, but they're, and then you look at the rest of the division, you say with the rest of the division, you know, the Twins may be better. They're spending a little bit of money. The Royals are still several years away in their rebuild. The Tigers are still several years away. They have a division that is going to make things easier for them.
And that is the fair point. The White Sox could be a worse team than the Padres and find themselves in the playoffs. You mentioned the Dodgers. The Rockies have back-to-back postseason appearances. The Rockies' pitching staff right now is what the Padres hope and pray they mm-hmm. will have 2 years from now. Mm-hmm. The Rockies are in great shape. They're not going anywhere. It's going to be interesting to see how it all shakes out. The other team
that... the Rockies aren't going anywhere. One thing I'll say is this. Their lineup's not very good also. And if Nolan Arenado leaves at the end of the year, uh-oh.
But they at least have the stay streamer position players in the upper levels of their system who will hit. Either, in some cases, they're already there. The David Dahls of the world. We, you know, potentially Garrett Hampson, Brandon Rogers coming up. I still think the Rockies have more bodies to plug in sooner than the White Sox do. The other team these decisions really affected was the Phillies. The Phillies went into the offseason, you know, everyone has heard about the stupid money quote from the owner. And in a lot of ways, they've delivered. They took on salary and upgraded their team in a lot of different moves between signing David Robertson and Andrew McCutchen as free agents, bringing in Gene Segura, which I wrote in the chat yesterday. I think that was the single best move of the offseason that not enough people are talking about. Adding JT Realmuto, obviously the price was high. He's worth it. So the Phillies have already upgraded substantially. They are also in a meat grinder of a division.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the Phillies could win 82 games this year and be one of the 10 best teams in baseball just because they're going to be facing three of the other top 10 teams in baseball potentially 60 times this year. With Machado off the board, and I said from the beginning, Machado was a better fit for them than Harper, just given Michael Franco. The Phillies have some outfield options that are viable that I like more than Michael Franco, but either of these guys is going to make them better.
Yes. Let's grant that either of these guys is going to make any team better in 2019.
But in terms of overall fit, I liked Machado as the fit more, but again, he's off the board. They could do just fine for themselves by adding a Bryce Harper. Obviously, that's been the popular rumor. When you, again, same question with the other teams. Big picture, Phillies, what's in the big leagues now? Where they stand? What they can afford to do, both present and future? How much would you like or dislike a Bryce Harper to the Phillies signing if that were to be his ultimate landing spot?
Oh, I think it takes, you know, a very, very good offseason already and takes it into the stratosphere. I mean, because the reality of it is that, again, I'm sorry for being repetitive on this, but we're talking about franchise, call them franchise, cornerstone players, whatever you want to call them. Now, the one thing about Bryce Harper is we have to acknowledge the difference between Bryce Harper and Manny Machado is the highest highs with Bryce Harper are higher, but the lowest lows are significantly lower than Manny Machado.
Over the last three seasons, Machado's been the better player, and it's actually not that close.
It's not close. Like, Harper, at his best, is an MVP, runaway MVP caliber player. Bryce Harper's best seasons are inner circle Hall of Fame type seasons. But he's had...
But in fairness, he's done that
He's once. Done that one and a half of times, I would even... Like, the funny thing is Bryce Harper, earlier in his career, like, he's become less consistent. You know, again, I think there's... And his style of play does mean that there are going to be injuries that means that sometimes he's not going to be playing at his best. You put all that together. That said, the Phillies' problem, I felt like, again, last year, that was a good step forward for them. But one lesson we learned, ignoring defense completely is never a good idea, and they were bad defensively at a whole multitude of positions. But on top of that, that team last year, for all the prospects they have and they've been bringing up, again, when you say, who are these cornerstone guys? Who's the guy that you say, okay, we're going to pencil in that guy for a 4.5-5 war this year and next year and the year after? They were lacking in that. And now they've added Realmuto. If they add Harper, well, teams don't, again, you look at what it did for the Brewers last year to add Yelich, who's that kind of guy. Teams do not often add two guys like that in the same offseason. And you add that to what is a young core with, when we talk about a pitching staff, they have kind of the front guy. You know, Aaron Nola is, again, when we talk about this, Aaron Nola is better than any of these pitchers we're talking about for the White Sox or the Padres.
By a long shot.
By a large margin. And he's locked up because he was also, that was something else they did.
The four-year $45 million deal was fantastic.
They got him extended at a bafflingly low number. For several years to come, you put all that together and you say at that point, they're not asking for their young guys to be stars. They're asking for them to be solid. Can Rhys Hoskins be the... You're moving Rhys Hoskins back to his actual position and you're saying, can you be the third best hitter in this lineup? Okay, sure. That's a really good role for Rhys Hoskins. You're saying, okay... Can Scott Kingery, who hopefully, by the way, will have a position that he, you know, again, we're not...
Kingery's the utility man. Cesar Hernandez and Gene Segura.
Scott Kingery goes from being your everyday shortstop, a position he had never played in the minors or college baseball, to being a utility guy in 1 year. That's what you're doing here. You are now putting your team in position where you have depth. Nick Williams, if you sign Bryce Harper, Nick Williams is kind of your pinch hitter type, I would assume.
They have outfield depth. They can use some of that outfield depth to go make some more trade acquisitions.
Now their farm system is going to be a little thinner now, but that's okay. You know, it's a great division. If you also, one term I'll say is the Nationals, the Nationals offered Bryce Harper $300 million. And I do believe in hindsight are like, okay, that worked out well. He turned it down. That worked out really well for us. Because I think that they can reasonably project that they are going to get Harper-esque production from Juan Soto.
Well, they allowed them to have a more well-rounded team. Their catching situation last year was atrocious. They mm-hmm. now had some space. They go get Yan Gomes and Kurt Suzuki. Mm-hmm. They upgrade second base tremendously. They bring in Brian Dozier, who even a declining Brian Dozier is better than Wilmer Difo, what they've been throwing out there recently. You go get Patrick Corbin, even if
their pitching staff is frighteningly good.
It allowed them to spread the money around and fill multiple holes. And that, at the end of the day, you can have...
And I don't feel like that their offense is not going to produce, because a lineup with Soto, Rendon... You know, again, what you mentioned,
Trey Turner, Ryan, you know, even Victor.
They
Robles.
Have cornerstone players.
By the way, even if, you know, Ryan Zimmerman's getting up there, but he still has had some offensive thump in there.
By the way, Victor Robles, hey, we're going to have you come up. And you know what? You can bat seventh for us. We're not asking you, when we talk about Eloy Jimenez, we talk about Fernando Tatis Jr. These are guys who have to come up, and from day one, they need to be stars. If Victor Robles plays a really good defense in center field, they're not asking him to be a star. They don't need him to be a star in 2019.
You hit on all these young stars, and we've talked about them a lot. The Padres, the White Sox, the mm-hmm. Phillies. Every year, spring training gives us kind of the first view of who some of those guys could be. And sometimes we see it right away, sometimes we don't. Last year, Ronald Acuna set the world on fire in spring training. Yeah, that's going to be an impact player for the Braves very, very soon. Shohei Ohtani set the world on fire in the opposite direction in spring training, just made everything look terrible.
And it still was.
And it still was a marvel unlike the game has seen in 100 years. What for you are the teams and players that you think are most intriguing to see in spring training this year? I'll be in Florida, you'll be in Florida, Josh is going to Arizona. We'll have a lot of coverage here at baseballamerica.com, but with games supposed to start tomorrow, got rained out, that A's Mariners game.
Starting today.
The A's Mariners officially had the first spring training game yesterday, and it got rained out.
They said tomorrow.
The first group plays today, and then everyone plays tomorrow. What are the teams and players for you that you're going to be most intrigued to watch this spring training?
It's kind of a bad answer, because go to the backfields. I'm really looking forward to going to Rays camp and seeing Wander Franco, because Wander Franco is really, really good. But not just Wander Franco, but that is a team that has a whole lot of very interesting young players. I'm going to sound like Debbie Downer here a little bit. There is an artificiality to spring training that does, you know, that is a little frustrating in 2019, because it would surprise me in no way if Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was as good a hitter in the Grapefruit League as any hitter in the Grapefruit League. We have seen this. We saw this with Acuna. We saw this with Chris Bryant. Maybe it's that Eloy Jimenez does the same thing out in the Cactus League. And the reality of it is that, and when that's done, on opening day, they will be in AAA, because that is where we are now, you know, and all that. And the reality of it is so that is one thing that is different now. Like, you know, I'm not saying this didn't happen occasionally, but we have the idea that players earn jobs in spring training has kind of largely gone by the wayside. And again, in some ways it makes sense. There is a certain...
I would say some of the veteran battles do. The young players, in a lot of cases, are being put down in AAA regardless. Not always. We saw a guy like Ryan McMahon get on the opening day roster last year. But generally speaking, the young guys are going to be sent down regardless.
But also, front offices are a whole lot smarter than they used to be.
The top young guys, I should say.
But I'm saying front offices are smarter. So even with the veterans, a guy hitting 300 versus a guy hitting 250 in 45 at-bats is not, like, again, guys don't actually, like, those evaluations are now made on much more than just what they look like in, you know, okay, that ball fell in and that ball didn't. Those, again, there's much deeper distinctions being made. But again, like I say, like, one of the things that's awesome about spring training is, yeah, I mean, we are in a world now where the great thing is even if you can't get to Arizona or Florida, you can watch a lot of these games and you can see a lot of, I mean, to me, one of the best things about it is see a lot of these young prospects. Now, you're going to be watching them. They're going to be wearing number 88. And it's, you know what? Actually, well, let me make one other thing that's a new trend that I love. As we have more of these games being broadcast, what teams are starting to do, which is a great, great, great idea, instead of it just being the normal MLB crew doing these games, who, in some cases, when, I mean, to take an example, when, you know, let's not say Wander Franco, but let's say that Moises Gomez steps into a game for the Rays. 10 years ago, 5 years ago, that guy comes in, and you can tell that the broadcast crew who's talking about this literally is reading his stat line out of the media guide, and that's what they know. More and more, teams are saying, you know what, we're going to do more of these games, and we're going to give an opportunity to our minor league broadcasters. And you're seeing some of these. You know, I saw yesterday, I think, that Mick Gillespie's doing games. I've seen multiple of these minor league broadcasters doing games. You know what the great thing, one of the great things about that is instead of it being like, it's the fifth inning, so let's talk about anything other than the game because all these players are in here, not the stars now, they're still going to talk about those players. And by the way, that's one of the great things about spring training. You know, like, yes, you're also going to see, oh, so that's where this random minor league invite, I didn't know where he was now. But that's one of the great things. I'm watching. If I'm a fan, you know, a Baseball America listener, and I'm watching a game in the seventh inning, I'm watching the game in the seventh inning not so I could hear your opinion on, you know, the best burger you've had, but I'm watching to see, hey, wait a second. You know, Christian Pache's in center field right now. I want to see if he's going to get to make a play in the gap. You know, things like that. And that's where we are seeing more of it. You know, I'm sorry. I'm really being a Debbie Downer about spring training. Who are you looking for? What are you looking for to see?
I think the Mariners, for me, are going to be interesting. We saw them tear it all down this year. We've got a little bit of a glimpse yesterday, Shed Long with two doubles. He really opened my eyes in the fall. Like, I think seeing how some of these Mariners kids do, you know, early spring training, just, again, getting eyes on guys, seeing, okay, what improvements have been made in the offseason, where are they at? Seeing Shed Long, Eric Swanson, obviously Yusei Kikuchi, but we know he's going to be, you know, legit. We never really know, but there's a 99% certainty he will be a solid big league contributor. But some of the other guys that they acquired, you know, even Kelenic and Rodriguez, you know, whatever game time they get, if any, would be limited because they're so young down the ladder. But we're going to see Justin Dunn. You're going to see Eric Swanson. You're going to see Shed Long. You're going to see some of the guys they brought in and have touted as maybe being able to help the team this year or next year. That's going to be interesting to me to see. Out in the Grapefruit League, you know, I am going to be interested to see the Mets, and I will be seeing the Mets. I'll have reports from Mets camp, but not from maybe the reasons everyone expects. I'm going to be really interested to see where Peter Alonso's defense is. That, to me, is going to be how that has progressed this offseason. Where that is right now compared to where it was in the Arizona Fall League is going to be an interesting subplot that I want to see, because that's going to determine if he's really playable. This is a National League club. You have to be able to field basic ground balls. That's been an issue.
Mm-hmm. The Mets are a downer. Like, disappointing for them that there's not going to be a DH in the NL in 2019.
So, you know, we'll see where he stands there. I'm going to go see the Cardinals. I think they're interesting because there's so many young arms they're going to be relying on this year. Well, it's Alex Reyes and potentially in the rotation. We're going to see a little more extended views of Dakota Hudson, Austin Gomber, Daniel Ponce de Leon. They came up last year, did some good things. Ryan Helsley. I'm interested in seeing the guys who they will see the big leagues this year. Mm-hmm. Where are they? What are they showing you? How realistic is it that these guys can be ready, whether it's in 2 months, 3 months, 4 months? That's always kind of an interesting subplot to me. And the Braves, too. I'm going to be up in Kissimmee to finish it off, or Lake Buena Vista. You mentioned seeing Christian Pache. You mentioned seeing the guys who are still prospects. Seeing some of the young pitchers, because right now the Braves have four spots.
By the way, Luis Gohara slimmed down this year back, which is encouraging.
Yep, Dave O'Brien with the Journal-Constitution, The Athletic, had a really good article about that. Just again, seeing, okay, Soroka's shoulder, Gohara's general, you know, where he's at, both mentally and physically.
Yes.
These seeing Kyle Wright.
Kyoki Toussaint's control, you know, all
Kyle
these
Wright, seeing all these guys who we know they're talented, but at the end of the day, what matters is the major league contribution they can make, and seeing where and how they've grown from maybe last September, or in some cases from the fall of last November to now, is always something that I'm going to be keeping an eye on. So I'll be down there starting on Saturday. We'll have a week and a half of wall-to-wall coverage. JJ will be going down a little bit later in March. Josh will be out in Arizona, so we'll have a lot of spring training coverage, and it'd be nice to write about actual baseball games again, JJ.
We always talk about, we have two seasons here. We have baseball season, and then we have prospect season, and we are back in baseball season now. You know, we have a mock draft up today at baseballamerica.com. You know, Carlos Collazo, our draft writer, is coming back from a very busy week in Florida, you know, both seeing some JUCO, top JUCO players, but also top high school players, Brennan Malone and all. In fact, actually, he is back. Man, he's already back and cranking away, because that's what Carlos does. You know, we're in the second week of college baseball, you know, and now, you know, we're Kyle's been rolling out the you know, what if everyone was homegrown? You know, we're rolling through those. We will have
a Major League preview issue went to press yesterday, so keep an eye out for that in your mailboxes.
Yep, and we're putting a lot of that content coming online real soon. We thank Manny Machado for signing just in time for us to get it in. You know, Bryce, we wish we'd have, you know, Bryce Harper, Dallas Keuchel, Marvin Gonzalez,
Gio
Craig Kimbrell.
Gonzalez,
you know, yeah, so there's still some out there. But
Adam Jones.
You know, but again, as always, we do want to remind you, it's a great time to subscribe to Baseball America, baseballamerica.com. You know, you can get the print mag, which, by the way, you know, we still want to hear your feedback. I'd love to hear your feedback on, you know, if you got your college preview, which is out now, the new monthly format, you know, the new, you
new
know,
expanded every, monthly format.
Right, so if you have thoughts on that, JJ Cooper, JJCOOPER at baseballamerica.com, or my DMs are open at JJCoop36. I am interested to hear it. You know, really, we're interested to hear. Again, we get a lot of response. We appreciate that. I apologize if I have not responded to everybody, but it is something we want to hear. We want to hear what you like. We want to hear what you think we should do better. You know, we are constantly working to try to make this the best product we can, and we appreciate your feedback. As always, we appreciate those who already subscribe with us, who already read us, who already, you know, but again, especially the subscribers, you are, you allow us to do what we do. We thank you for that. But baseballamerica.com/store, you can subscribe now.
And go ahead and leave us some feedback on the podcast too, whatever platform you're listening on. We'd love to.
A review on iTunes, we always appreciate.
For JJ Cooper, I'm Kyle Glazer. This has been another edition of the Baseball America podcast. Thanks for listening, everybody.